Okay, hi friends. This will be a short program, program 45 of Telepathy and the Etheric Vehicle. I've been getting a more sturdy computer because there's just so much that is processed through this computer. And that has taken time to set up, and it's not completely set up yet, okay. But I have time before the cosmic firework to do a little bit anyway. So a little segue. Here, let's see, what are we looking at? This idea of bypassing the astral body and even the soul body, which has experienced its own kind of supernova, following the fourth initiation. DK tells us that the entire process of bypassing takes much time. When something is bypassed, let me add, it just isn't involved anymore in the same way. And either let's just say its limitations are bypassed. Its limitations are no longer acting as obstacles to the process. So he tells us that bypassing takes much time and must be worked at with intensity. May I suggest that when we are involved with occult meditation and in training for higher abilities within the field of occultism, intensity is required. So, first of all, DK says, with the focus upon the emotional nature through conscious discrimination, we look on at the emotional nature, let me say, and we realize the way it has misled us. And finally, upon the soul nature, under the inspiration from the spiritual triad, which is eventually substituted for the soul. Now, the spiritual triad is planetary in its perception, and it is the true soul, and as I've said before, the causal body or egoic lotus is like the scabbard for the sword of the spirit, which is more the spiritual triad. Now, DK does not make this seem easy, and we should develop the necessary patience as we contemplate what this process will require of us. And let's do that for a moment. That all this will take many incarnations. For the, that's what he says. And he goes on, for the registration and interpretation of higher impressions is a basic occult science and takes much learning and application to perfect. Well, one gets the sense that Master DK has been working at this for centuries. And when people such as he is, we can use the word people, I say, because sometimes there's a place where the fifth ray monad is referred to, and the word people or persons is used. So it just depends on the impression. It depends on the point of tension, which we are considering. So, he is centuries ahead of where we stand in our ability to interpret or even register higher impressions. He had ability to do so, perhaps as the Neoplatonic scholar Plotinus or Plotinus, and he was, the story goes, Arya Sangha, meaning the noble, valorous community of the Buddha, to Master K.H.'s Nagarjuna, or Nagarjuna, Master K.H., the one who is Master K.H. now, was his primary teacher, but he always considered the Christ as his fundamental master. And he was, I remember attending the 10 years ago, the Dalai Lama's big Kalachakra offering in Washington, D.C. And there it was said that Nagarjuna, or Arya Sangha, rather, who was the Tibetan then, had the ability to contact the Christ in the so-called Tushita heaven. Now, these are all higher states of consciousness about which we can, frankly, only dream a bit and at least get an academic understanding. Anyway, much time and learning are required. Now, if we'll begin with program 45, that takes us to the edge of 107 and 108 in this magnificent little book, Telepathy and the Etheric Vehicle, or maybe we should call it an assemblage of lessons given to the very first of the seed groups that DK was cultivating, we can go on and with what he is saying and say, as these two processes, I assume the processes of bypassing, are slowly developed, the third stage becomes automatically becomes increasingly effective. Now let's see if we have that right. There's also the possibility here that we're talking about the stage of mental recording and the stage of brain reception, and then the third stage being the stage of recognized interpretation, for which purpose the magnetic aura of the one who conveys, the one who impresses, has to be very rich and know what is appropriate to offer in terms of symbols, images, etc., to get across the kind of impression that he or she wants to get across. So, you know, it's a difficult phase, maybe that's what he means, or bypassing. I'm not sure at this point, but maybe we'll see shortly. DK goes on and says, as we go to page 108, the received and interpreted impression brings about fundamental changes in the life and consciousness of the aspirant, and above all, in his orientation. Okay. So let's accentuate that. The received and interpreted impression, and this is, let's see here. There we have that phase of interpretation. Whoop. Brings about fundamental changes in the life and the state of consciousness of the aspirant, and above all, in his orientation. Fundamental changes, and in the life and state of consciousness, and above all, his orientation. Okay. Now, what happens? He becomes, says the Tibetan, an evocative and invocative center of energy. He's invoking low, invoking high, and he's able to, either way, he can respond to the impressing agent, and he can engage with those he wishes to affect in a positive manner. So, just reading this from the Tibetan, he becomes an evocative and invocative center of energy. Now, pause for a moment. And let's ask ourselves whether we find ourselves to be that, an evocative and invocative center of energy. That which he has received through the medium of his aligning channel becomes a potent factor in invoking a fresh flood of higher impression. It also makes him evocative upon the physical plane, so that the magnetic aura, remember this important term that takes a long time to build up, signaling that which takes a long time to prepare. From DK, so that the magnetic aura which he has engendered becomes increasingly sensitive to these spiritual inflowing impressions, and also increasingly sensitive to that which he evokes from his surrounding physical environment. This is an important paragraph. I'm just going to kind of, just bring that into kind of a, before our eyes, and see what I might embolden. So this is one thing for sure. He becomes an evocative and invocative field of energy. And he has been receiving, through the medium of his aligning channel, he has been receiving impression, and becomes that which he has received becomes a potent factor in invoking still more, a fresh flood of higher impression. So he becomes sensitive and interacts with the bestower of impression at whatever point of tension becomes possible. And because of that sensitivity, a new and fresh flood of higher impression can stream forth. He becomes as well evocative upon the physical plane. So that this all-important magnetic aura from which he draws, and which DK says he has engendered, becomes increasingly sensitive to the inflow of spiritual impression, and also increasingly sensitive to that which he evokes from his surrounding physical environment and from humanity. Well, this will help those of us who wish to have a positive effect upon the human beings individually and the groups with which we are engaged. And the groups begin to become larger in scope, not just our own little group, but something quite large along the community and national line, and even making the contribution to humanity. Okay, so a fresh flood of higher impression is coming in because of the way he responds sensitively to the invocation from higher points of tension. Remember that a point of tension is another way of describing what an entity really is. And there's a whole ladder of more refined and powerful and inclusive entities that we have to deal with as providing to us at different points in our development the impressions that are appropriate to us. We cannot receive impression from the same sources and to the same degree that, from which a master or even a Chohan can receive. That would be out of proportion. And remember, too, it would be out of humble response. We would violate the principle of learning to work with an adjusted sense of right proportion, the true definition of humility. Now, what else happens? He becomes a power station en rapport with hierarchy, and he receives and distributes in responsive to the evocative call of humanity and human need. Something is, may I suggest, evoked from him He receives and distributes the energy received. Now, this obviously will uplift humanity that is demanding, even in a manner inchoate, some sort of upliftment. They wish to be evoked, humanity does, even if they don't realize they so wish or so desire. So he becomes a receiver of light and of spiritual illumination, and a distributor of light in the dark places of the world and into human hearts. He is therefore an invocative and evocative center for use by the hierarchy in the three worlds of human evolution. So DK is providing us with some summaries here, we might say, some important condensations, which hopefully simplify our understanding of these rather abstruse matters. He is responsible for receiving and distributing, because he is being both invoked, I would say, and evoked. There's an evocative call from humanity and from the need of humanity. So he receives and distributes the energy received. Okay. We have to remember that the true member of the hierarchy is always aware of human need, and the disciple who is following in the footsteps of such high initiates is increasingly aware of what humanity truly needs. So we can pause for a moment and ask ourselves about the degree of awareness of human need that is characteristic of our consciousness. And sometimes when I think of this, I just become almost horrified at the depth of human need and the seeming lack of skill in action to meet that need. So maybe it's so for you too. He becomes a receiver of light and of spiritual illumination, and a distributor of light in the dark places of the world. That's a really good sentence. And into human hearts. And I'll make that really bigger, because that is what we are finally aiming at in order to be really useful as even relatively small agents of the divine plan. So he becomes usable, may I say. I told you the story, I think, of my first interview more than 40 years ago, when I went to work at the Arcane School, and I guess I was asked the "why are you here" question, and somehow I spoke about usefulness, at least to be useful, which is like being a tool in the hands of a greater entities who could inspire. And she commented, Mary Bailey did, that's always what Foster Bailey, her husband at that time, said, well, at least let me be useful. I'm sure that all of us could increase our sense of usefulness and our true usability. So he becomes an invocative and evocative center for use by the hierarchy. In the three worlds of human evolution. Now, certainly the masters realize that they are exactly that. And they are used by still higher entities and by the hierarchy as a whole, and even by Shambhala. So that's the question we ask ourselves, one of the many. Am I both an invocative and evocative center for use by the hierarchy in the three worlds of human evolution? Well, each will find his own way. Our history as a human being moving towards the fifth kingdom of nature is so variegated. We're also uniquely different in a way, and yet we share certain commonalities, certain identical phases, and eventually, in order to make that transition into the fifth kingdom of nature, we have to be usable by those who comprise the fifth kingdom or kingdom of souls. We don't yet really need to speak of being usable in the same way to those who comprise the council chamber at Shambhala, or within Shambhala. That would be a demand placed upon actually the masters, who since 1925 or so have been repositioned from off the higher mental plane into a new ashramic location, by and large, anyway, which involves the Buddhic plane and the, in some cases, the Atmic plane, and also in certain ashrams related to Brahma, there is a remaining of the ashram upon our usual mental plane, though on the highest sub-level of that plane. Well, okay, that's not really a lot of programming right now, but I think that given the fact that I have to begin with a cosmic fire in-depth program in 1 hour, I always, by the way, I always look at cosmic fire and I say, what right have I got to talk about treating that voluminous book, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, as if I could treat it in depth? But let's just say, of course, the Tibetan's words are in depth, and I may have the success of offering some cross-references and associated ideas which take us deeper. And I'm, I hope, wise enough to say that I may have that success. I may not. But one has to try in any case. Because if we can work with cosmic fire in such a way that we can treat it as the psychological continuation of the secret doctrine, an amazing thought, then we're actually doing something to help improve human understanding and the manifestation of the divine plan. And we're certainly charging our abstract mind with higher vitality. And if we are so fortunate, we will enter also the Buddhic realm of pure reason, the intuitive kinds of impressions for which we could be called responsible when DK asked us how much of the mountain of vision we have climbed for ourselves. And let's just pause on that for a moment. It's a question that I sometimes ask, and I ask myself, I know I'm standing on the shoulders of giants, and therefore maybe see more. I think Newton, Sir Isaac Newton, the great physicist and alchemist, that much is not so well known about him, that Newton made that comment, which I will paraphrase, that in this way, that if I seem to see more than other men, it's because I am standing on the shoulders of giants. So in a way, he's working with an adjusted sense of right proportion. He's realizing that without their predecessory efforts, he would not be able to see what we see. Now, what we think we see anyway. And what about us? Here is the Tibetan with centuries of predecessory efforts at illumination and application and at engendering a magnetic aura from which he can draw and help others. But without his predecessory efforts, what would we even think we know? I sometimes think about that and how I was always of a philosophical turn of mind, but my so-called philosophy would not have led to the depth of thought which now from time to time occurs, unless the Tibetan and his work were present to me. It has straightened out, I would say, many of the deviations through which I had been passing. I thought the same to myself when I read some of the textbooks or reflected upon them, which 44 years ago were part of our reading in basically a program in counseling psychology in the education department of the university that I had decided to attend for further education. And I thought, how very obscure, how very confusing, how filled with great holes which lack the firm principles of Master DK. I did manage to work him into my thesis. I guess my teachers believed that I would do such a thing, so I didn't suffer the consequences too much. But the ordinary books written by ordinary people, well, some may have value, and some may miss entirely very important points. And actually lead to partial estimation of the truth, very partial. Lead to the missing of major illuminative principles, and therefore leave the student still more stranded in the realm of illusion. While thinking, the student would be thinking, perhaps, that he really learned something. But then again, these modern universities are not in general ready for the occult approach, nor is humanity ready for the occult approach. As TK said, it will be a long time before humanity is ready for occultism. And of course, by that I have to mean spiritual occultism, that many human beings can be overcome by negative occultism is sadly true. So years will be required before real understanding comes. Well, look, we've been working here on the aspects of, point 13, and now we're going to be going into the higher aspects of relationship. Looks like 15 pages, which seems at the rate we're going here like an eternity. Is an eternity measurable, or does it mean forever? So program 45 then stop at least the way we're doing it, just a little at a time. So I'll bring this down, and as I get ready for a change of pace, not much covered really in a way, but it's our facility with what is covered that does count. So this has been the 10th of December, and basically we started from that juncture of 107 and 108 and went to 109. And next time, whenever that is, Sometimes I say, I hope it's tonight, but often there are things that come up in the kind of weather we live in here, you know, when the roads are covered by freezing rain and travel is slowed down to 20 kilometers an hour, you know, other outside factors enter in. So you never know what they're going to be and how they will interfere, perhaps with necessary activities. Okay, friends. Next will be program 46, and I basically have to, if I can do this. Okay, that was program 45, and I'm bypassing the correct answer is what I'm doing. Okay. So here is the short version, and I also tend to send you the long version as well, but Michael Gaeta, he doesn't really need that. So I'm afraid, as is my tendency, I'm overcomplexifying certain things. But let's see how this might work out. And I'll save this and maybe not bother you while I'm doing this. Okay, friends, so I'm going to, at the moment, discontinue, and wishing you a very healthy absorption. This is, as I say, a very short program. Basically, it's program number 45, from Telepathy and the Etheric Vehicle, and by now you should be used to receiving these programs in the way that they are being presented. So, okay, from all of us, lots of love and good absorption, and I'll be signing off now. Bye for the moment. Okay.